Good morning. It is good to see you this morning. We are so glad that you are here. We do hope you'll join us this Saturday and invite some kids. Kids, invite some friends. That is going to be a great time for us. And I am also thankful to everyone who showed up and helped get all of this and all over the campus ready. It's going to be a wonderful time. I'm also grateful, Craig, for your words this morning. It was very thought-provoking, and I thought that was meaningful. And interestingly, my next sermon series, for those of you who are interested, is entitled Only the Lips That Touch Welch's Touch Mine. And so I thought that was very, very serendipitous. The Lord was working there, because that's a phrase most of you had never heard before, but I was right ahead of him on that. I'm ready for that. If you have your Bible, open up to John chapter 15. That's where we're going to be this morning. As we continue in our series, I Am, we're looking at the great I Am passages in the Gospel of John. And this is another one where Jesus comes back to it twice in the text. And so you'll see on the screen behind me, we're going to read from verse 1 and 5 as we begin. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener, the vine dresser. I am the vine, and you are the branches. Now, to begin, I want to poll the audience just a little bit, and I want to see, by show of hands, how many of you, and I have to scoot over, in case you didn't know, about 6 weeks ago, our real projector, our regular one, was fried in the storm, and so we've got this one here that everyone continues to kind of run in front of from time to time. So I'm going to try to scoot this way and not do shadow puppets while I preach, but if I do occasionally, I'll try to make it a good one to keep you interested. Okay, by show of hands, how many of you would consider yourself to have a green thumb? Okay, not very many. There's maybe, I saw about 15 hands or so go up. Okay, for those of you who raised your hand, I want to tell you something, and I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but I despise you. In the love of the Lord, of course, I despise you, but I despise you. And I despise you because I do not have a green thumb. And so you might ask, does that come then, my feelings of loathing towards you, from jealousy? And I would say, absolutely. Does it stem from my own insecurities based on my inadequacies? Yes. It does. Does that suggest that I am petty and small? I think we all know the answer to that by this point. But I do not have a green thumb. And so I am happy for you. But I have killed so many poor, innocent, unsuspecting plants that never knew what was coming down the pike and never had a chance by the time they came to our house. And I've gotten a little better at it. I've learned a little bit. I think I understand some of the concepts, but it's the application that I still struggle with. And so, actually, if you came to our house, our yard is kind of green. It's kind of nice. It looks pretty good, but there's a reason for that, because I wasn't very good at it on my own, and so we saved up money over time to actually put in a sprinkler system. So it was automated, and lay down sod, or I had someone else lay down the sod for me, and now I actually pay for someone to show up about 6 times a year to apply all the fertilizer and the weed eater and all the kinds of stuff that needs to be done. And if anyone has been here very long, you have heard me say on more than one occasion that I am very cheap, so you know that it really pains me to pay someone to do something that I feel like I should be able to do on my own. But I kept failing on my own, and so I finally sort of farmed out the hard stuff to an expert, which leaves me with the simple task of mowing and weed eating. In other words, what I can do is I cut and I hack, and that's about it. When it comes to my lawn, I cut and I hack, and that is also my strategy when it comes to my bushes and trees and other plants in my yard. I can cut and I can hack. Now, I know the proper term is to prune and to trim, but I'm not sure that anything proper is going on when me and shears are involved. And so when I see a plant, my strategy is basically this: that thing looks a little big. I should probably randomly cut the thing. Just haphazardly pick a branch here and a branch there and lop it off until it's a little smaller than when I started. That is my strategy. Now, like I said, I think I understand some of the concepts, but not all that well. And I'm not very good in practice. But when we jump into John 15, Jesus is going to lean into this horticultural imagery, or more specifically, viticultural imagery, having to do with the vine and the vineyard and the vine dresser. And he's speaking imagery that a more agrarian society would more readily understand. They would understand the concepts. And so this is an illustration that would connect with them in some ways perhaps better than us. When I asked you to raise hands and only about 15 of you in here said, yeah, I've kind of got a green thumb. But the reason that Jesus lands on this image of the vineyard and the vine dresser is not just because it's a good illustration for his day and time, although it is. But it's also because this image is rich with history and theological meaning and a part of the identity of the people of Israel. Because for a long time, that's imagery that has been used throughout the Old Testament and is still employed at the time of Jesus as a part of an identifying marker of the people of Israel. So during the time of Jesus, some of the coins of the Jews had an image of the vine on it, of a grape cluster on it, because it was an important image. Or the historian Josephus, who was around the first century time, describes that as you move toward the sanctuary entrance to the temple, on the walls there was an enormous golden vine representing Israel. And wealthy citizens could bring gifts to add to the vine, gold grapes and leaves and stems, and these would be added by metal workers to this ever-growing vine. And Josephus claims that some of the golden grape clusters were so big, they were the height of a man. Now, those are some big old grape clusters. So, in other words, this image was an important part of the identity, connecting them to their ancestors, to their story, to God. And as I said before, it shows up a lot in the Old Testament. But here's the funny thing about the way that image keeps showing up in the Old Testament. Almost all of the times that that image of Israel as the vine or the vineyard shows up, they are used to describe times when Israel is being chastised for not producing the proper fruit, for not bearing fruit at all, or bearing bad fruit for their acts of injustice towards the poor and the alien and the orphan and the widow, for their acts of infidelity, of chasing after other pagan gods around them. It is a beautiful image. It just usually doesn't show up in beautiful situations in the Old Testament. So Psalm 80, verse 7, and there's more we could read, but I'll narrow it down. Restore us, God Almighty. Make your face shine on us that we may be saved. You transplanted a vine from Egypt. This is Exodus language. And you drove out the nations and planted it. This is promised land imagery. And you cleared the ground for it, and it took root, and it filled the land. And that image sounds really nice. But what's wrong with it is, you heard in verse 7, it's a call for restoration because they're not there anymore. This is during a time when they're exiled. And so the psalmist goes on to describe that this beautiful vineyard with all its beautiful vines is now in disarray. The walls of the vineyard have been torn down. And every stranger that walks by can walk up and pick the fruit whenever they want. And any wild animal that wants to can wander into the vineyard now and tear up the vines. It was a beautiful image, but it's not a beautiful image anymore. It is a cry for God to restore what has been lost because of sin and rebellion and a beautiful vine that bore bad fruit. Or Isaiah 5:3, now you dwellers in Jerusalem and people of Judah, judge between me and the vineyard. This is envisioned as God speaking to them. What more could have been done for my vineyard than I have done for it? When I looked for good grapes, why did it yield only bad? Now I will tell you what I'm going to do to my vineyard. I will take away its hedge, its protection, and it will be destroyed. I will break down its wall, and it will be trampled. And so it is into this cultural and theological understanding that Jesus says, I am the true vine. Not Israel, it is me. Which is not merely pushing Israel aside or replacing Israel. What Jesus is doing is fulfilling the calling that Israel had received from the very beginning, to be a kingdom of priests for all the nations, for the healing of the nations. He's doing what Israel was called to do. He is showing the way. He is modeling the way. He is making the way. He is fulfilling the purposes that God's people were called to do but had failed to do. Jesus will produce the fruit that God has always envisioned would come from his kingdom of priests. I am the true vine. And my Father is the gardener, the vine dresser. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me. And I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, and you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing. Now, there's a lot going on in these verses, but I want to break down a few elements. In verse 1, after Jesus identifies himself as the true vine, he describes the Father as the vine dresser, the gardener. And so far, it's a beautiful scene. Perhaps you picture a picturesque Napa Valley with wine country and beautiful images of rolling hills and grapes and vines. But then he describes cutting off and pruning and throwing into the fire and suddenly the serene image is replaced with a horror movie kind of image, or at least for me, which probably speaks to my poor gardening skills more than what's going on here. Because I'm the one who arbitrarily slashes and slices and hacks and hurts and throws away. But that's not what the gardener does. The gardener is interested in health and wholeness. Because healthy branches are fruitful branches. But in order for there to be overall health and fruitfulness, dead parts need to be removed to foster good growth, and overcrowded parts need to be thinned back so that enough nutrients and lights are available for good growth. And unproductive shoots need to be trimmed to send more nutrients for fruit-producing shoots. God's work on us and in us and among us as a church community is not out of cruelty with haphazard hacking and chopping in our life. God is the careful pruner, helping transform our lives to be healthy and fruitful and life-producing lives that they were planted to be. Now, interestingly, when Jesus says to the disciples, "You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you," the word he uses there for clean is an interesting word. He chooses a word, katharos, that sounds almost identical to the word he used just before, the word for pruned, kathairo. In other words, it's got this similar sound because he says something similar is going on just by being with me, just by spending time with me, just by listening to my teaching and staying at my feet. This process has been pruning you. It has been shaping you. It has been cleansing you. Just by being in the presence of Jesus, you are shaped and formed and made and remade for optimum fruit production. And that's why Jesus moves to a word that he's going to repeat 6 times in this short section. Remain in me. Stay with me. Stick with me. Abide with me. Because I am the only source of life. Practically speaking, a branch that becomes disconnected to the vine, the source, has already begun its descent into death. As beautiful as it is when we give someone a bouquet of flowers, we know that we have handed flowers that are on their way to the trash bin, right? That before long, they're going to look like this. They may last a week, or if you make sure you keep them in water and you add that little packet of plant nutrients that they give with them, or add a little Sprite I've heard can help, you might be able to eke out just a little bit more life for just a little longer, but all we are doing is prolonging the inevitable, right? We know that as beautiful as those cut flowers are, they will not last long because they become disconnected from the vine. The only thing they have in front of them is death. Jesus is the vine. Life is only found in the vine. Remain in me, abide in me, stay close to me, and let the Father do his gardening work in you. And when you do, he says, you cannot help but produce fruit. Notice that fruit is not a test. Fruit is not a sign of our greatness. Fruit is simply a sign that we are connected to the vine so that God's greatness can work through us. That's what fruit symbolizes. That the source of life comes coursing through us because we are connected to the one who is life. It is a natural byproduct of being connected to the vine and allowing the gardener to do his work of trimming and thinning and removing that which needs to be removed so that we remain healthy. So what is the fruit of a healthy, Jesus-connected life? Here it is very simple. What's the sign that we are remaining in His love? Some of us remember that this is an image that the Apostle Paul uses in Galatians 5. And we describe it as fruit of the Spirit, which is life that naturally flows and virtues that naturally come from life connected to the Spirit, lived in the Spirit, with the Spirit living in us. And we know that list, and it's a good list: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. We know that list. But Jesus boils it down to the one that always shows up at the top of the list, the greatest of these. How do we know we're remaining connected to Christ, living life connected to the vine? Love. Love one another as I have loved you. That's the command. Love one another as I have loved you. That's it. That's the sign. That's how we know that we are connected to the vine. Love as I have loved you. That's kind of simple, isn't it? Until we remember how it ends, not just with love, but love as I have loved you. And then we start to remember, well, that's a little harder than the love I like to offer sometimes. Because if I'm honest, I often don't want to love as He loved me. I want to love as I want to love. Generously sometimes, but conditionally others. I want to keep score sometimes. That's my kind of love. When it's convenient, that can be my kind of love. When they've earned it, that can be my kind of love. When I have to pay someone back, that can be my kind of love. If I owe them something, if I know there is a definitive end in mind, that it's not just open-ended, but it can be a one-time act or a couple times, if it doesn't cost me too much. Any of this ring true with you from time to time? So if we're going to love as He loved, then I better remain in the one who shows us what real love looks like. If I'm going to love, not just as I define it, but as He demonstrates it, then I've got to abide in Him. I've got to stay close to Him. I've got to remember the stories of the kind of love that He shows that presses out the edges of the love, of the boxes and the boundaries in which I want to live out my love. If I'm going to love as He loved, I better keep letting the gardener go to work on my life. And you should too. Trim some busyness so that I make more time to help. Prune some selfishness so there's more room for me to think about others and not just about myself or about how my friends or my family or my church or my society can meet my needs and my wishes and my wants and my preferences. I've got to let the gardener cut away the deadness of pride and prejudice so I stop thinking of myself more highly than I should and stop looking down at people who are different. If I'm going to love as He loved, I better make time to regularly be in His presence so His teaching and training can quiet the noise so that I hear again what it means to live for what lasts and work for what lasts. And so this is our prayer. Lord, do the work in us that only you can do, so that our lives produce the fruit of your love, that we love how Jesus loved us.